picture a chilling image right now. Imagine a rotting green zombie hand bursting straight out of the dirt in this really gleamy graveyard.
Oh, wow.
Right. And in its decaying grip, it's clutching a thick stack of past due notices and a set of shiny house keys.
That paints quite a picture.
It does. And in the background, there's a boarded-up house silhouetted against a full moon, and right next to that zombie hand is a tombstone carved with the words, "Foreclosure Notice."
It sounds exactly like the poster for a cheesy 1980s horror movie.
It really does. But for a rapidly growing number of homeowners across the country, this isn't a movie. It is real life.
It's a striking visual and, unfortunately, a highly accurate representation of what people are actually experiencing right now.
Yeah.
We are pulling from a really substantial stack of sources today to fully understand this phenomenon. We're looking at in-depth investigative reports from PBS and the Center for Public Integrity,
which were incredibly detailed.
Very. We also have historical data from the Federal Reserve, and we're digging into specific legal statutes from Florida. Plus, we're breaking down consumer protection guides from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, which acts as a watchdog for everyday borrowers, along with guides from Experian, Bankrate, and the National Consumer Law Center.
So our mission for this deep dive is to uncover exactly how long-forgotten debts from the 2008 housing crash are literally coming back from the dead to threaten homeowners today.
And it's happening a lot.
It is. We're going to explore the complicated financial history that created these monsters in the first place. And most importantly, we're going to outline exactly how you can protect your hard-earned equity.
Because the financial systems at play here are incredibly complex by design. They largely rely on consumers simply not fully understanding the fine print or, you know, the historical context of their own loans.
Which is why we are here. Whether you are a homeowner yourself, maybe you're prepping for a big meeting in the real estate industry, or you just love a fascinating financial mystery, this deep dive is custom tailored to help you avoid being blindsided.
Absolutely.
You work hard for what you have, and you deserve to know what might be lurking in the shadows of your financial history. Okay, let's unpack this. What exactly is a zombie mortgage?
At its core, a zombie mortgage is an old home loan. Usually we're talking about a second mortgage or a home equity line of credit, commonly known as a HELOC.
Okay.
The defining feature of a zombie mortgage is that it's a debt the homeowner genuinely thought was settled, forgiven, or perhaps discharged in bankruptcy many, many years ago.
Like during the 2008 crash.
Exactly. Typically, we are talking about the chaotic aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. The borrower stopped getting statements, the lender went totally silent, and the debt was just forgotten. But legally speaking, that debt never actually died.
The human toll of this is devastating when you look at the real-world examples. I mean, the PBS investigative report highlighted some truly harrowing stories that bring this into focus.
I really do.
There is the case of Terrence Harden from Bowie, Maryland. He bought his home 20 years ago. Like millions of others, he got caught up in the housing crash, but he managed to get a loan modification through a government program.
Which a lot of people did.
Right. And for 8 years following that, he paid his mortgage faithfully. He built up almost $200,000 in home equity. And then, completely out of nowhere, he was evicted over a $35,000 second mortgage that he thought was dead and buried long ago.
Just incredibly tragic.
The detail that really sticks with me from the PBS report is about his 14-year-old daughter, Olivia. Her belongings, her toys, her medications, her family pictures were just shoved into black trash bags and left out on the front lawn.
Oh, man.
All over a debt he didn't even know he still owed.
That level of disruption is heartbreaking, and it is far from an isolated incident. We also have the story of Jerry and Sharon Lamerno from Ohio. They took out a $30,000 second mortgage back in 2006.
Right, before the crash.
Exactly. They eventually went through bankruptcy and reasonably assumed the debt was wiped out as part of that process. Fast forward to 2024, almost two decades later, and they get a call from a debt buyer called SMS Financial.
Just out of the blue.
Out of nowhere. Suddenly, that $30,000 debt had ballooned into a massive liability. The debt buyer was demanding $75,000 to $80,000, which included years and years of retroactive interest.
That is wild.
And right after that demand hit, the Lamernos started getting calls from predatory house hunters looking to buy their supposedly foreclosed house at a bargain.
It blows my mind that a bank could just forget a debt for 15 years and then suddenly demand 80 grand. How does the mortgage industry operate like that? How do they just go silent and then reappear?
What's fascinating here is a specific accounting practice called a charge-off. The Experian Consumer Guide breaks this mechanism down perfectly. During the crash, when borrowers couldn't pay, lenders would wait about 120 to 180 days.
Okay.
After that period of non-payment, the lender would charge off the debt. Now, to the average person, charged off sounds a lot like forgiven or canceled.
Yeah, it sounds like they formally wrote it off their ledgers and moved on to other businesses.
It is an accounting loss for the bank's own internal books. They're essentially telling their investors and regulators, hey, we don't expect to ever collect this money. But that is a purely internal accounting move.
Oh, I see.
A charge-off does not mean the debt is legally forgiven. The borrower still legally owes every single penny of that money. The lender just stopped actively trying to collect it at that specific moment in time because it wasn't cost-effective.
So the debt is just lying there in a coma, waiting. But to really understand how so many of these second mortgages were created in the first place, we have to look at the broader context. How did the mortgage industry get so flooded with these secondary loans to begin with?
To understand that, you actually have to look at the massive wave of deregulation back in the 1980s.
Way back then.
Yeah. According to the historical data from the Center for Public Integrity and the Federal Reserve, two specific laws profoundly shifted the cultural mindset around lending and paved the way for the 2008 crisis and, subsequently, the zombie mortgages of today.
Which laws were those?
First, you had the Depository Institutions Deregulation and Monetary Control Act of 1980. This law essentially removed state interest rate caps.
Okay.
Prior to this, states heavily regulated how much interest a lender could charge to prevent predatory lending. Removing those caps opened the floodgates for high-rate subprime loans.
That makes sense.
Then, in 1982, came the Alternative Mortgage Transaction Parity Act. This act allowed for non-traditional loans that were previously considered far too risky, things like adjustable-rate mortgages or air arms, and loans with massive balloon payments at the end of the term.
I kept seeing references to these 80-20 loans in the sources, especially when talking about the early 2000s housing boom. What exactly does that mean, and how does it connect to these deregulations?
The 80-20 piggyback loan is a direct descendant of that deregulated environment. If you were buying a house in the early 2000s, traditional lending standards usually required a 20% down payment in cash.
Right.
If you didn't have that, you had to pay for private mortgage insurance. The 80-20 loan was a loophole around that. A lender would give you a primary conventional loan to cover 80% of the home's purchase price.
Something.
Then, simultaneously, they would issue a completely separate second mortgage for the remaining 20%.
So the buyer is financing 100% of the house with $0 down, taking out two separate mortgages on the same day just to avoid paying mortgage insurance. That sounds incredibly precarious.
Precarious is putting it mildly. Those 20% second mortgages were incredibly risky. They were often subprime, non-conforming loans with terrible terms.
But the banks didn't care.
They didn't because of a process called securitization. They were taking thousands of these risky second mortgages, pooling them all together, and repackaging them into complex tradable securities to sell off to Wall Street investors.
Wow.
The Center for Public Integrity described it brilliantly in their report. They called it a financial version of hot potato. The lenders could originate a terrible loan, collect their lucrative upfront fees, and just pass the risk along to someone else down the line.
But then the music stopped. The 2008 bubble popped. Property values plummeted overnight across the entire country, and suddenly millions of people owed way more than their homes were actually worth.
Exactly. And in that devastated economic environment, those 20% second mortgages became financially worthless.
Because there's no equity left.
Right. If a home is underwater and it goes into foreclosure, the primary mortgage gets paid first from the sale proceeds. Because home values had dropped so significantly, there wouldn't be a single penny left over for the second mortgage holder.
So they just gave up on them.
It made absolutely no financial sense for the owners of those second mortgages to spend money on legal fees to foreclose. They just walked away and abandoned the loans.
And the borrowers.
Borrowers were terrified of losing their homes, so they entered into government modification programs for their first mortgages, like the Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMBP. Because they never heard from the second mortgage company again during that entire modification process, they mistakenly assumed those silent second mortgages were rolled into the new primary loan modification or just completely forgiven by the government.
So what does this all mean? We have millions of these second mortgages sitting in filing cabinets, totally worthless in 2010. Why are they suddenly rising from the grave now, almost two decades later?
It all comes down to the simple economics of the post-pandemic housing market, the massive equity boom.
Home values have skyrocketed.
Exactly. Home values across the country have soared to historic highs over the last few years. Consider that second mortgage that was completely underwater and worthless in 2010. Today, in 2026, that same house has appreciated massively.
So the math changed.
Completely. That old, forgotten debt is suddenly backed by hundreds of thousands of dollars in real, tangible home equity.
And that blood in the water has attracted a very specific type of antagonist.
Oh.
The debt buyer. The PBS report profiled an investor named James Mafuccio from Aspen Funds. His entire business model revolves around buying these non-performing, charged-off second mortgages. And because the original lenders still view them as dead paper, he buys them for absolute pennies on the dollar. He actually shared his internal math on an interview. He stated that if his fund buys $1 million worth of this zombie debt, they expect to get $2.2 to $2.5 million back.
It's an astronomical return.
It's a staggering return on investment, and it is entirely funded by threatening to foreclose on people who thought their financial nightmare ended 15 years ago.
There is another terrifying scenario that the Experience Source outlines, which highlights just how messy the system is. It's a phenomenon called abandoned foreclosures.
What does that look like?
Let's say a lender started a foreclosure process back in 2009. The homeowner got the terrifying legal notice, packed their bags, and moved out of the property, assuming they had lost the house to the bank.
Right.
But because the home value was so low at the time, the lender decided halfway through that it wasn't worth the legal fees and maintenance costs to finish taking possession. They just walked away and abandoned the legal process.
If the bank walks away, who actually owns the house?
Here's the cruel irony. Because the title never formally changed hands through the court system, on paper, that original homeowner is still the legal owner of that property.
You're kidding.
No. And because they are still the legal owner, they are still entirely on the hook for the original zombie debt, plus 15 years of property taxes, municipal city fines for overgrown lawns, and compounding interest.
That is a nightmare.
They might suddenly get a massive tax bill or a foreclosure notice for a house they haven't even driven past since the Obama administration.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because despite all these complex systems, you are not helpless. There are ways to fight back and protect your equity, but you have to be highly strategic.
Very strategic.
The Consumer Guide from Bankrate lays out one cardinal rule above all others. Don't wake the zombie. If you know you have an old second mortgage out there and you haven't been contacted by anyone, do not go poking around blindly. Calling up the old servicer just to check in or see what the balance is can actually trigger their automated systems, alert them to your new home equity, and wake the zombie up.
That is fantastic advice. Do not initiate contact. But if the zombie is already at your door, your first major line of defense is state law. Specifically, the statute of limitations.
Let's use Florida as an example.
Good choice. According to Florida statute section 95.111, there is a strict 5-year statute of limitations to foreclose on a mortgage and a 1-year limit for a lender to seek a deficiency judgment if the sale doesn't cover the debt.
If Florida caps the timeline at 5 years, how are debt buyers legally getting around that limitation today to collect on loans from 2008?
This is where we have to look at a highly specific legal nuance explained by the Legal Clarity Source regarding the concepts of acceleration versus deacceleration.
Okay, break that down for us.
Usually when you miss a monthly payment, the 5-year clock only starts for that single missed payment. But most mortgage contracts have an acceleration clause. If you default, the lender can send a notice demanding the entire loan balance immediately.
Meaning the whole sum.
Yes. That formal acceleration starts the 5-year clock for the entire massive debt.
So it's basically like a legal stopwatch.
Yeah.
The lender clicks the stopwatch when they demand the full amount and the 5-year countdown begins.
Precisely. But here is the catch that debt buyers exploit. Let's say the original lender accelerated the loan and filed for foreclosure in 2010, but then the court dismissed the case, maybe because of all those paperwork errors common during the crash.
Right.
The Florida Supreme Court has ruled that a dismissal effectively deaccelerates the loan.
Meaning the stopwatch doesn't just pause, it completely resets back to zero.
Yes. It returns the lender and the borrower to their previous relationship as if the acceleration never happened in the first place.
Oh, wow.
Which means, if you continue to miss payments after the dismissal, which of course you would, if you thought the loan was dead, the new debt buyer can issue a brand new acceleration notice today and start a fresh 5-year clock all over again decades later.
That is an incredibly tricky loophole, A dismissed case doesn't mean you won. It just resets the board for a new collector to try again when you have more equity. But beyond state laws, we also have federal shields that listeners can use, right?
We do. And these federal shields are powerful tools if you know how to wield them. First, there is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, or the FDCPA.
How does that help?
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has issued strict guidance stating that under the FDCPA, a debt collector cannot threaten to sue you or threaten to foreclose on a debt that is past the statute of limitations. It is fundamentally illegal to use the threat of a lawsuit to scare you into paying a time-barred debt.
But what about all that retroactive interest we talked about? Getting charged 15 years of interest when you never received a single bill seems like it shouldn't be legal.
That is where the Truth in Lending Act, known as TILA, and the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, or RESTPA, come into play.
Okay.
These federal laws require mortgage servicers to send periodic, accurate billing statements to borrowers. The rules are very clear on this. If a servicer failed to send you those required monthly statements for years while the loan was sitting dormant, they generally cannot legally retroactively charge you for all the interest and late fees that allegedly piled up during that silent period.
That is a huge protection for homeowners. Bringing all of these state and federal tools together, the National Consumer Law Center, or NCLC, put together a comprehensive list of 15 ways to fight a zombie foreclosure.
It's an excellent resource.
We have synthesized their legal strategies into a practical survival guide for you. Step 1, don't ignore the notices, but whatever you do, don't just blindly pay it. If you panic and send them $50 just to get them off your back, that tiny payment can be seen as legally acknowledging the debt, and it will completely restart the statute of limitations clock we just talked about.
Never make a payment, no matter how small, without seeking legal advice first. It is the biggest trap borrowers fall into.
Step 2, demand the paperwork. You can use what is called a RESPA request for information. Make these debt buyers definitively prove they actually own your loan.
Right. Remember that hot potato securitization process we discussed?
Yes, the messy paperwork.
The paperwork from 2006 is often a total mess. Contracts were lost, assignments were never recorded. If they cannot produce the original promissory note with a clear chain of title, they often cannot legally foreclose on your house.
Which leads right into step 3. Look for IRS Form 1099-C. If your original lender actually forgave the debt back during the crash, they were legally required to report that canceled debt to the IRS as taxable income to you.
Finding that form is bulletproof evidence that the debt is legally dead.
Though the reality of digging through storage boxes in your garage to find a 15-year-old tax return is incredibly difficult. But if you can find it or request old transcripts from the IRS, it stops the debt buyers in their tracks. Step 4. Use equitable defenses like lashes. It is an obscure legal term, but it basically means you are arguing to the judge that the lender's unreasonable years-long delay in collecting the debt severely prejudiced and harmed your ability to defend yourself.
You can argue that evidence has been lost, witnesses have moved on, and it's fundamentally unfair for them to wait 15 years just to ambush you.
And finally, step 5, get a lawyer or a housing counselor. Do not try to fight these Wall Street hedge funds by yourself. The laws are too nuanced.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the only way to successfully navigate these predatory practices is through education and aggressive legal representation. These debt buyers are banking entirely on your fear and your ignorance of the legal system. When you know your rights under TILA, under RESPA, and you understand the nuances of your state's statute of limitations, you shift the balance of power back to yourself.
This has been such an eye-opening deep dive. To wrap it all up, the ghosts of the 2000s housing crash are still wandering around out there. If you had an 80-20 piggyback loan back in the day, you need to be highly aware of your financial history.
You really do.
Remember that an accounting charge-off does not mean you are legally off the hook. And most importantly, know that state time limits and federal laws are your absolute best weapons against these debt buyers who are trying to steal the equity you have spent the last decade building. Understand your rights and never assume an old debt is dead just because it hasn't sent you a bill lately.
This raises an important question, though, as we look to the future of lending. We have seen how Wall Street's frenzied securitization packaging and selling those subprime loans over and over again created a massive paperwork nightmare where people don't even know who actually owns the deed to their home today.
Right.
Looking ahead, with today's massive rise of fragmented, app-based, buy now, pay later loans and digital microlending, are we currently laying the invisible groundwork for a completely new generation of digital zombie debts? Debts that will rise to haunt consumers 20 years from now.
Now, that is a truly terrifying thought to mull over. Something to definitely keep a close eye on as the financial tech space continues to grow and fragment. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into zombie mortgages. Stay vigilant, keep checking your financial records, and as always, keep questioning the world around you. Catch you next time.